On the agenda today, we have issue 276, converting the appendices into normal sections, a review of all of the JSON-LD GitHub issues to make sure that we're not forgetting to address an issue. We have Nicholas's addition to the agenda, which is what we should do with the flattening algorithm, and then a review of all official LASCAL 2 and post-LASCAL 2 RDF working group comments. Again, we're reviewing all of these to make sure that we have all of our ducks in a row before we enter the candidate recommendation phase. Is there anything else that needs to be added to the agenda?
This is David Booth. I wanted to propose a suggestion for blank nodes as predicates for how we deal with that.
Okay. Let's deal with Nicholas's flattening algorithm and then that suggestion. So we'll do issue 276, then Nicholas's item, and then the blank nodes as predicates suggestion. And then we'll get to the review of all the other issues. Anything else that needs to be added to the agenda? Okay, first up is issue 276. This issue deals with basically converting the appendices into regular sections in the document. The primary argument for doing the conversion is that the sections are normative, they're very, very normative sections, meaning that they hold the bulk of how the data model is described and various things like that. So I think the proposal is to just convert the appendices into normal sections. Are there any thoughts on this? Anyone strongly for or strongly against conversion? Neither, one way or the other. I'd be fine with converting the appendices to normal sections. It doesn't seem like it would be that big of a deal at this point.
I don't think that we should necessarily move them around too much.
Right.
We've already had issues with ordering, but other than that, I don't see any problem with changing them to regular sections.
Yeah, I think the proposal would be just remove the appendix colon from the section title and leave them exactly where they are in the document.
I would be fine with that change.
Okay. Yeah, I guess the reference was to some of Dan Connolly's advice about a document being able to read properly if the appendices are stripped out, which is sort of what an appendix means, and that's sort of what's made sense to me.
Mm-hmm. So is it the A, B, and C?
It might not be that. Let me...
A and C?
I think we had a C. Looking now... yeah, it would be A, B, and C. We'd leave Appendix D as is.
Yes.
So Appendix E becomes Appendix A. And, of course, it would then move after Appendix C. So it is a slight reordering.
Because
you can't have chapters after appendices, right? So...
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, so data model would be chapter 7, or section 7. Section 8 would be the grammar. Section 9 would be the relationship to RDF. And then we would have appendix A, relationship to other linked data formats. And the same thing with INA would stay as an appendix. Acknowledgements would stay as an appendix. And references would stay as an appendix.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Any objection to this? I'll put a proposal in here. OK, Okay, so the proposal is to convert normative dependencies A, B, and C to normal normative sections, leaving them at the same location in the document. Okay, that's resolved. Anything else on this issue before we move on? Okay, next up is issue 279, which deals with, I'm sorry, Nicholas.
No worry.
I guess this is promotion.
Extraneous stuff left over after flattening.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's a different one.
Well, this is kind of, it is. I did.
Yeah,
I think
that's what it is.
Not promoting. Yeah, the undescribed as trying, just trying to figure out a way of stating the topic. Let's see. This is the link to the issue is there in IRC. Basically, this is Nicholas has written up the problem with the current flattening, or quote unquote, the problem with the. Current flattening algorithm. Some people might see it as a feature. Others might see it as a good feature versus a bad feature. Nicholas also has placed a very interesting example into the issue tracker that kind of demonstrates what the downside of what the algorithm does currently is. So. I think the conversation is mostly about whether or not we want to, whether or not we see this as a bug in the current flattening algorithm, and whether or not we want to fix that bug in the flattening algorithm. Fixing the bug would result in not promoting things that are just leaf, basically objects or data types to the top level in the flattening algorithm. Nicholas, hopefully that's a decent explanation of the issue. Do you have anything to add, or?
No, that's a good summary.
Okay.
I think.
Greg, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just noting that the same thing goes for the from RDF algorithm, which generates the same footprint. Right.
Anybody feel strongly one way or the other on this issue?
I'm just wondering if it's worth correcting at this stage. Because it's so trivial to filter it out afterwards if you don't want that stuff.
So I think I come at it, or my thinking on it is from a different direction. It's is this what the majority of developers are going to want? And if the majority of developers end up having to filter this data out anyway, I think that we're making the wrong decision. So if we decide to not fix it at this point and leave it, and the majority of developers end up filtering the data out, then we've made the wrong decision. We should have just had the nodes filtered out in the beginning. I think the other argument against it that at least resonates with me is that it does make the data a little messier. And in the case of data types, it's really weird. Like having to put data types as nodes in a flattened graph is just very strange. And I haven't really experienced that in many other RDF syntaxes, concrete syntaxes. Or even when using other RDF APIs. The other semi-compelling argument to me is that the data is only useful if you're counting the total number of subjects or trying to get the all of the subjects in the graph. And I don't think that getting a subject that doesn't have any data associated with it is really all that helpful. Or rather, if it is something that you want to do, you would end up processing the document completely anyway, or you could do that more easily. And I think that's going to be more rare than the case where somebody just wants to have stuff flattened out, all of the nodes with properties just flattened out so that they can iterate through them. So I think that there are a lot of little reasons to filter this data out. So I guess the core of what I'm saying is I think it is worth fixing it at this point, especially since fixing it later on is going to be more difficult. In the future, we can always add this data. However, if we put this in here and it's the wrong decision, it's going to be very difficult to remove it in future versions if people start writing code that depends on this type of output. So I think I'd be leaning towards like a plus 0.7 of on removing these extraneous blank node or sorry these extraneous nodes that don't have any data associated with them. Any other thoughts on it?
Well, I've never been particularly. I think they were an artifact of one of the large algorithm rewrites we did. And I sort of was a little bit surprised to have to do it. I just did because at that point I didn't really want to push on the issue. But I do think they make it messy. I don't find them particularly useful. If I needed to do something like that in Ruby, it would actually be pretty straightforward. I'd use a Ruby array flattening, which would just flatten all of the contexts, or all of the objects and arrays down, and then filter out those that just had an ID element. That would be a fairly straightforward thing to do. So in order to get that information, there's many other types of tools we need. If we require the algorithms to do that, then as Mono points out, we basically we remove our ability to ever sort of clean that up in the future because people could depend upon it. So better to not have it there now, and if there was acclimation, which I would greatly doubt there would be, it could be added in the future without breaking compatibility the way it would be if we had it and then decided we wanted to try to remove it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so unless there's objection, I'll put a proposal in here to basically fix the bug in the flattening and from RDF algorithm by not promoting undescribed nodes or data types to subjects during flattening slash from RDF. Okay.
So, do we need to mark it at risk? Or is it... how does this relate to sort of the status of the document at this point?
We can mark it at risk if we think that we're going to change it. We might change it during the candidate rec phase, and that it would be a good idea to do that.
I wouldn't want to have to go back and do another last call because of a change like this.
Yeah. What do you mean? Because we're changing...
If we are changing the algorithms... The algorithms are normative, and part of it, and that results in these being created.
Right.
Someone could make an argument that is sort of a violation of not changing things that weren't marked as being at risk.
Right. I think what we could do is say that this was a bug that was introduced. And while it does change the normative algorithm, the group is not, changing the intended design. It's something that we kind of discovered as a side effect, and the side effect wasn't really ideal. And the other, I guess, argument against it being a substantive change is that we're going into the candidate recommendation phase, and since the algorithms are largely a candidate recommendation phase thing, we are looking for feedback for this change during that phase. So going through another last call wouldn't necessarily do anything other than get reviewer comments in on it in the true test of whether or not the algorithm is solid enough to proceed to propose recommendation is whether or not the candidate rec implementers feel that it was a good change. So I think at this point we can basically avoid another last call by saying, look, this was a bug that we didn't intend to slip into the spec. It was just a side effect of the rewrite that we did previously. We're putting it back to the way it was, and we're marking it as at risk in case implementers feel that it should be done the other way. Does that seem like a reasonable approach?
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting.
Okay, great. Let's see. All right, so here's a proposal. Fix a bug in the Flanding tube from RDF algorithm by not promoting undescribed nodes or data types to subjects during the flattening slash from RDF algorithms.
How do we intend to fix it? Like, are we filtering them before flattening, so we have them in the node map, etc., but filter them out at the end, or do we try to not introduce them at all?
I think the original algorithm did put them in the node map, and that was sort of necessary because you didn't know whether you would otherwise need it, and then it was just removed when we actually output the flattened graph. So I think that's probably the simplest way to resolve it now, too.
Yeah, there's another reason that we want to do that, which is that the framing algorithm relies on the node map algorithm, and framing might need to have those subjects in there, or
yeah.
Just those extra nodes.
I just wonder if the node map can be an internal state and that you actually start building the resulting array of nodes using the node map to check if and actually reference the same object in that array and in the node map.
I'm pretty sure that's the way it was done before.
The node map is an internal structure. Yeah, the check you need to do before you add things to the resulting array is just that you only add things once you put extra information in it, apart from the ID.
I think that there's no issue, there's no problem with adding something to the node map that doesn't have any other properties associated with it, because it's entirely an internal structure.
The node map is just a set of things with ID, but the resulting array is the set of described things. And the way to fill that up incrementally instead of having to do it at the end as a filtering pass upon the node map is to build the array by when things are added to the node map, when you are adding properties to those things, add them to the array.
Yeah,
that should result in this.
To fix it, yeah.
Yeah, it's cleaner than filtering at the end, I think.
Oh, then I misunderstood you. So, before adding it to the node map?
No, before
or
if
before
you if
flattening
you
flattening it. So
but
currently,
flattening.
You build a node map where you have an index representation of all nodes, and then you flatten that index representation to an array, basically.
Yeah. Well, you could do flattening by building the node map and the flattened array at the same time. Of course, then you can't reuse the node map sub-algorithm as it is, I suppose. I'm thinking more of an iterative approach than a filtering step. But, of course, you can do either way. I'm not sure how that wording I suggest would affect the writing of the rest of the algorithm, so... It's just, I'd probably implement it like that in order to avoid having two loops. I would have two structures and fill them up at the same time.
I guess another question is, would making that change modify the algorithms quite a bit or make it harder to understand what the algorithms are doing?
I suppose mine is more of an optimization and perhaps not the easiest one to read and write in the spec.
Yeah, and you sort of have to keep the state for the flattened array during the node map algorithm. So you sort of leak that information into the node map algorithm, and I don't think that we should write it that way, but if we want to, we can mention that as an optimization.
Yeah. Yeah, the node map becomes the check for which things to add to the array. but we can discuss this in the list if the adding of this becomes tricky. I'd love to help hash out the wording.
Yeah, I'd like to try and keep the algorithm changes to the algorithms as little as possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we would just need to add a couple of words to the flattening algorithm.
I think for the from RDF, I think it just removes some steps.
Okay. All right. So I think that we should leave the actual implementation of this change up to Dave, Marcus, Nicholas, Greg. If you guys could chat about it in the GitHub issue tracker. To come to some kind of conclusion, because I think it's fairly clear what we want to do. It's just how to do it is not quite clear right now. But it sounds like, Marcus, you have a fairly decent hold on what would need to happen to the current algorithms to make this happen.
Yeah, at least the flattening algorithm. I'm not so sure out of my head of the from RDF algorithm, but it shouldn't be too difficult there either.
Okay, all right. Well, how about you just take a shot at it and then let us know if there are any major issues that come up.
Sure.
That'll be okay? Okay, great.
Yeah. The other question, what do we do about empty graph, for example? We have a named graph, but while it doesn't contain anything, do we filter that as well?
That's a good question.
Trig allows the specification of an empty graph. But obviously it doesn't result in any triple or quads in that case being created.
Yes, the argument for that is almost the same as the argument for subjects that don't have any predicates associated with them. It's effectively useless to the developer unless all they're trying to do is get a count or get a list of all the subjects and graphs there. In the document, and if they're doing that, then they're probably going to just want to process the JSON-LD document in a different way. They're not going to want to use a flattening algorithm to do it. So that would be an argument to remove graphs that don't have any data in them.
Well, but I think the fact that there is a graph with no data in it is of course, information. I think it's actually it's really the interpretation of an RDF data set as being a set of quads that does not allow the representation of an empty graph. In the abstract syntax, it can represent an empty graph. And I think there is value of retaining the information within the JSON representation that there is a graph that has no contents. So I think there's value to keeping that information in a flattened representation.
Okay. I don't really feel strongly about it one way or the other.
In my opinion, I think it would come down to what it means for algorithmic complexity. If it was extra work to remove empty named graphs, then I think that would suggest that we keep the empty named graphs. If it's extra work to retain empty named graphs, then perhaps it's not worth the bother.
I think we might have an additional problem here, which is we might have sort of disjoint information in the graph that where there are no other references to subjects that don't have any other properties. So if we remove them at the top level, they will cease to exist entirely in the flattened output. And I don't think that that's necessarily the kind of behavior that we want. In other words, if there's no reference to something else in the graph, we're going to lose the data if we flatten in the way that we're discussing. I don't think we can necessarily just iterate over the node map and say, is there more than one property for ID? I don't think it's that simple.
Okay, so you're saying that the previous resolution that we made may be fairly complex to implement?
Well, it's more complex than we were discussing. we need to make sure that the things that we're removing are things that are actually referenced elsewhere.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're dropping data, at least on the JSON side.
But I think we are dropping free floating nodes anyway, aren't we?
We should.
Well, that might be true, but we have the same problem with what Greg's saying with empty graphs. We could have an empty graph. If there's an empty graph that is not referenced by anything else, do we consider that a free floating node?
Yeah.
But you could say implicitly that the fact that it is a graph, it's not a node, so it's something else. I can't really speak for if it would be useful. Another perspective is that an empty graph sounds like a covert delete to me, but I don't know. I hesitate
The other problem
semantics to graphs. I don't.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think we can do that, and it doesn't. You can't actually say that in RDF that a graph is referenced because the name of the graph does not semantically relate to the use of that name in a triple someplace else. So just the fact that a graph has a name and is sort of freestanding and isn't referenced from anything else doesn't have any impact within the RDF dataset model.
Well, that's true, but if I recall correctly, I think we decided that we wanted to sort of take a different direction in that in JSON-LD without having to mention it, because we thought it was more useful to say that the name of a graph does have meaning, and certainly the way it appears in the JSON, it might give people the impression that it does have meaning, that you are actually referencing graphs. So it's sort of
then
a gray area.
I suppose we can just leave it at this and not extend anything in the solution of 279 to include dropping graphs.
Okay, so then the decision there is that we're just going to leave graphs alone. We're not going to try and clean them up.
Free floating nodes can be dropped, but graphs are not free-floating nodes, and we leave them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to make a resolution proposal here. Graphs are not free-floating nodes and should not be removed during the flattening. Or are they even going to appear in the from RDF algorithm? I'll just say the from RDF algorithm.
They can't really they can't, given the algorithm basically deals. No, it doesn't. The algorithm does deal with graphs. It doesn't deal with quads. You iterate over the set of graphs. So based upon your input, it's possible that the input specifies an empty graph.
So graphs are not free-floating nodes and should not be removed during the flattening from RDF algorithm. And of course, all of this is dependent on the algorithm being sane after it's done. We're done with it.
Yeah.
Okay. That's resolved. Anything else on this issue before we move on to predicates, blank node predicates? Do we have an issue for the blank node predicates?
Well, we can file it under David Booth's comments.
Yeah, or
feedback to the last call.
Yeah.
The last call comment. Yeah, let me find that very quickly. Da, da, da. that would be issue 132. 132. Okay. All right, so this has to do with issues around using blank node predicates in serializing or converting to RDF or interpreting as RDF. Specifically, we've discussed skolemization, and I think we've moved away from skolemization for blank node predicates. David Booth has been working through using relative IRIs as well. David, would you like to give a bit more background on where we are with your most recent proposal?
Sure. Yeah. So am I audible?
Yes.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so again, coming into this, my assumption was that there was an important use case for having blank nodes as predicates, and that was why I initially suggested skolemizing them, because that was a way to allow them, but avoid them from impacting the RDF. But when I looked into the use cases, I became more and more convinced that they really are not needed, that there are other potential solutions that, in my opinion, would be better. However, some people are attached to the idea of using blank nodes as predicates. The overriding motivation seems to be to make transitioning easy from JSON to JSON-LD, and this is certainly a good motivation, and I certainly agree with that motivation. So it's really a question of how to achieve that goal. My suggestion at this point, I think, would be, we've kind of argued back and forth about some of the use cases, and I've tried to point out other ways that these use cases could be addressed instead of using blank nodes as predicates. But given that some people are attached to that idea, I guess what I would suggest is to add an option to produce extended RDF, have that option default to false so that the default will be to produce standard RDF. But if the option is true, then extended RDF will be produced, and that will produce blank nodes as predicates. If the option is false, then it will produce standard RDF, and those triples with blank node predicates will be thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And in conjunction with that, I would suggest also that mentioning or suggesting other ways to handle JSON properties that an author is not yet ready to map to stable IRIs, such as mapping them to unstable IRIs, but documenting the fact that those IRIs are unstable, or mapping them to such that they disappear from the RDF, and noting that that a consumer that really wants those values can still access them at the JSON level, and potentially could even inject them into the RDF after accessing them at the JSON level. So I'll paste the suggestion in, which I just emailed to the list a few minutes ago. That's kind of what I would suggest at this point, I think. So I think that would meet the needs that I've heard and, hopefully get us past this and hopefully make everybody happy. But
yeah, so I would be happy with that change. Both of the changes. So I think adding an option to produce extended RDF, defaulting to false, is good because it achieves what both sides of the argument wants with at least the API, I believe. And then I think it would be good to provide some suggestions on what authors could do if they want to do this kind of mapping. I would be a plus 0.5 to plus 1 on both of the proposals. Anybody else have feelings about either one of these suggestions?
I think these are great suggestions, and I would vote for them moving forward.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Me too. I'm just a bit confused because David, like a couple of days ago, still said that he wouldn't be satisfied with such an option. So now saying you are fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to kind of go for what I think I can get. So
okay.
So,
Okay.
Just curious about sort of the unstable IRI. Is that, are you suggesting that we mint a new IRI scheme which is specifically designed to be unstable, or
That's certainly a possibility. I guess it depends on how strongly people feel about that. You know, my own view is that anybody who depends on an undocumented feature is doing so at their own risk anyway, and they ought to know better. But, you know, I mean, if people feel strongly that they want to make it very clear and make an easy way for people to make it very clear that an IRI is unstable, then that is a route that we could go. You know, we could just register a well-known, you know, prefix like that so that people could use that, and that would explicitly indicate it.
I know, we could use underscore. Sadly, it does not have a valid screen. Oh, maybe just spell out underscore.
Yeah, right, as a well-known screen.
Call the prefix B-node.
B-node.
Yeah, that's pretty close to solemnizing, but anyway, I don't think that that's needed, personally. I think if somebody wants to be... certainly people can document the fact that certain things are stable and other things are not stable.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody is getting out-of-band information from them anyway, then they ought to have the documentation anyway. So, but I don't know. It depends. I mean, if you guys feel strongly about doing something like that, that it certainly is an option to register something like that.
Yeah. The only downside that I see is just more work created for the group without real positive upside to it, other than, you know, it's documented. And I could see other folks pushing back, saying that, well, if we're going to, you know, create this, then perhaps we should create it for, you know, all RDF data sets. And I don't think that there would be that much disagreement on doing that. It's just the amount of time that we'd have to put in to, you know, settling on what the IRI is and registering it and all that kind of overhead. That's really the strongest argument against that I have.
Yeah. I think if something were registered, then it would not be JSON-specific. It would just be a general-purpose unstable prefix that simply indicates that the meaning of this IRI is not stable, subject to change.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody could use it for any purpose. But I agree. I'm doubtful that it's going to be worth the work to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So go ahead.
Just a comment. In principle, I agree with David's discussions of late, most of them, and people shouldn't rely on undocumented IRIs and things like that. Unfortunately, in practice, we've seen lots of that. Like the IANA IRIs for relations, which are sometimes used in RDF, which I think is fairly good because they are known. They 404, all of them, and the other nascent patterns, or I'd call them anti-patterns, is the schema.org extension mechanism, which promotes using 404 URIs for extending properties, which just absurd syntactic semantics.
Okay, so let's deal with the first proposal first, and then we'll talk about some of the details of the second proposal. I think we have consensus on the first proposal. This would not put us into another last call, because we specifically mentioned that blank nodes as properties is a feature that's at risk, and there may be changes around it. So here's the proposal in IRC, which is the exact text that David Booth just pasted in above. Had an option to produce extended RDF, which defaults to false. The option is true. Never mind. Everyone's plus one. I'll read it. Read the rest. Okay, so that's resolved. The second proposal is to, suggest other ways to handle JSON properties that the author is not yet ready to map to stable IRIs, such as mapping them to unstable IRs and documenting that fact, mapping them to the empty string, so preventing them from appearing in the resulting RDF. And I guess the third thing would be to mint a new unstable IRI scheme or unstable IRI pattern, which I think no one's really in strong favor for. It might be helpful, but it might not be. So maybe the suggestion would be to...
I would also anticipate that there may well be larger pushback on registering something like that. A larger pushback from the web community, and because, well, anyway, it's probably not worth getting into, but...
Right.
So.
Okay.
I think tag URIs should come in that case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a number of URI schemes that could cover it. I mean, URNs, I think we might want to just leave it up to the application developer on how to do that.
Yeah.
Because we can't foresee, you know, all the different possibilities, and we're also talking about a corner case here,
yep.
where we don't really want people to do this in a big way.
Well, using a document relative fragment would be a way, because it certainly is document local.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and that's one way. So I guess what are we going to suggest? We should say maybe in general. Map them to an unstable IRI and document that fact. And one way of doing this would be to use a fragment identifier for the document, a document relative fragment identifier.
That
do we want it?
Doesn't make much sense, in my opinion.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you would use fragment identifiers for stable URIs just as well for most subjects.
True.
So it would just confuse people.
Okay, so do we want to map them to the empty string so they don't show up in RDF, or do we feel that that might be...
If you map them to the empty string, then that screws up expansion and compaction.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
right.
If you don't
well,
want them to show up in RDF, you just map them to a blank node.
No, but the point of the second part of the suggestion was not to be prescriptive, but just to provide suggestions.
Yeah.
For other ways that authors could address the problem.
Right, and I guess what we're trying to figure out, David, is what are those suggestions? So I think the only real suggestion that's sticking so far is that they should map it to an unstable IRI and make it very clear in the documentation for their API that IRIs that match that pattern are unstable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one way. But also mapping them to the empty string so that they disappear from the resulting RDF is another option.
No, the problem is they also disappear from the JSON-LD because anything you do results in processing it, and that requires transforming the property names to IRIs. So if you have two properties that both map to the empty string, when you expand, they basically collapse down to a single IRI.
Yeah, I understand. So
you also can't map things to the empty string in JSON-LD because certain implementations don't support that. Certain languages do not support that.
It's not allowed
yeah.
in JSON. Keys can't be empty.
Right.
Well, whatever the mechanism is for making them disappear from the RDF, I thought that was the mechanism, but maybe I got it wrong.
Well, if you map them to... If you map them to B-node identifiers, after a first resolution, if you map them to B-node identifiers, they'll disappear, unless you specifically say you're going to an extended RDF set.
Yeah, I thought there was another way to do it, though, to make them disappear.
No.
If they are unmapped, in other words, there is nothing in the context would cause that property to be mapped to an IRI, then they are dropped during a expansion.
Okay, that's what I meant then. Yes, then that's the one. So leaving them unmapped so that they are dropped, because then they will still be accessible at the JSON level if a consumer really wants to get those values. And that consumer,
yes.
after getting those values, could even inject those values into the RDF later if they wanted to. you know, if they're that motivated.
Right. Although if we look at this specific suggestion, it is a suggestion on other ways to handle JSON properties that the author is not yet ready to map. So are you saying one potential is just leave them unmapped and they will be dropped from the data?
Yeah, maybe it's simpler just to put it that way, yeah.
Okay.
But that's kind of moot because that's already supported. I thought the other suggestion was just about saying that if you prefer to have them preserved in the RDF, but you know that these are sort of garbage properties, somehow document that.
Yeah, I'm trying
if
to...
If we just stay silent on this. I mean, we never endorse or recommend BNode predicate anyway, so can we just stay silent on this?
I think has come up so often that we should probably say something about it at this point. And I don't think
it really hurts
anything.
Why we are using BNode predicates, but that's an entirely different discussion.
So maybe just suggest that other ways of handling it would be to map them to unstable IRIs and document the fact that those IRIs are unstable, or leave them unmapped. Maybe just that recommendation.
I think anyone who is sophisticated enough to figure out how to map something to an unstable IRI and document that is capable of just mapping them straight to RDF. The use case, I think, is for people that are just getting into this and perhaps have some need to start to deal with their data but aren't prepared or aren't sophisticated enough to deal with the full body of it. So I think the solution there is just don't map those properties. And if that is the default behavior, it probably can go unset. But it perhaps a note just saying, I think we already do say that properties that don't map to IRIs are dropped. That's fine. So I think it's done.
Okay. I guess maybe this has to do with you, David, correct me if this is wrong, but the specific use case, so we already covered the other thing. So we cover the case where it's unmapped. We already talked about that in the spec. So this might be the case where an author wants to preserve the information in some way, but they don't want to do it in some kind of permanent way. They want to preserve the data, maybe even for the next couple of hours, and expose it via an unstable IRI, but they also want to document that IRI is completely unstable and may disappear at any point.
Yeah, they don't want to throw away the data. But
they're
not yet ready to commit to a stable IRI. I guess, that's the use case that I heard.
Okay, all right. So suggest other ways to handle JSON properties that the author is not yet ready to map to stable IRIs, but wants to preserve.
Doesn't OWL allow you to do this by, certainly I've seen in some vocabulary documentations, the status of different terms, whether they're stable or unstable or obsolete. I don't recall whether OWL specifically has annotation properties to do that, but if that's the case, then it seems to me that's really not a JSON LD issue. It's just a vocabulary documentation issue.
There are vocabulary. There is the VS prefix. I forget what that prefix is, but we use it in the baseworm vocab. But I don't know if that's See, I think that in this case, the author is not even going to the trouble to. They're not going to want to go to the trouble to even document the vocabularies that they're using, the predicates that they're using. They just want to say, look, anything that's under this URL space is just it's temporary, and the only reason that I'm giving it a URL is so that it doesn't disappear, that I can, take it over to RDF, it doesn't disappear, but it's still just as unstable as a blank node. or maybe there's more stability to it for, than a blank node, but less stability to it than an IRI, a vocabulary IRI.
So how about this suggestion, which I'll paste in an IRC here? It's pretty simple. It's just when mapping properties, if the author is not yet ready to commit to a stable IRI, suggest mapping the property to an unstable IRI and document the fact that the IRI is unstable.
That would be fine with me.
It just kind of nudges them toward using IRIs without, you know, without being heavy-handed or anything.
Any thoughts one way or the other on that proposal?
Yeah, well, I mean, what's an unstable IRI? Every IRI is unstable in a sense.
Well, but I think if you use that, a way to document those IRIs would be using this VS vocabulary, for instance, and define it as being unstable.
It seems like the advice should instead be suggest mapping the property to an IRI that is documented as being unstable.
Yeah.
That's what it means for an IRI to be unstable. It's documented as such.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, it's just mapping the property to an IRI that is documented as unstable. Okay, so when mapping properties, if the author is not yet ready to commit to a stable IRI, suggest mapping the property to an IRI that is documented as unstable. Does that seem good?
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so that is resolved. Let's see. The next, are there any other issues that we need to do a technical discussion on? We're still going to go through and review all the JSON-LD GitHub issues and the LC2, post-LC2 RDF working group issues. Is there anything else that we need to discuss before we start doing that?
This is David. I have one question. I had offered to make suggested changes directly to the API doc to align the verbiage so that it doesn't suggest that JSON-LD is not RDF, but I don't have the document. I don't know where the source document is. Suggesting that is a quicker way to do it rather than me trying to itemize all the changes needed.
I sent you the link, David.
Oh, did you really? I missed it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll look for it. I'm sorry. I must have missed it.
Look it up again. Just give me a second.
And David, are you saying that you do that as a pull request in GitHub?
Pull request. No. I was just going to offline make the changes, run a diff, and then send it back. And if you guys like the changes, you can just keep them.
Okay. That's fine.
Was that Marcus who said they sent it to?
Marcus.
Yeah, it was me, Marcus.
Okay, let me search. Maybe I missed it somehow.
And
I
also
just put the link in IRC.
Oh, did you? Okay. All right, super. That's what I need then. Thanks.
Yeah, and you can get the raw version of that document by clicking, let's see. If you click on that document, that index.html file, and there's a raw button that'll show up at the top, and you can basically download the raw version of the document that way.
Just to make sure I got this. Yeah, I think I got it. Yep, this is, looks like it.
So you can doubly get that URL that I just put in there, or download it, and it should.
Okay, great.
Give you that.
Oh yeah.
Okay,
awesome. Yeah, that's exactly what I need. Thanks.
Okay. All right, so let's start going through the JSON-LD GitHub issues and just get through as many of them as we can. What we're looking for here is anything that we might have missed that we should cover on a future call. And the reason we're doing all of this review is to make sure that we're in good shape to go into the candidate recommendation phase. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. Review all JSON-LD GitHub issues. Here's the first link. And these are links to things that are currently uncategorized that we have. I'm going to go from the top to the bottom. So the do not promote undescribed nodes we discussed today. That was Nicholas's comment.
And it's categorized as being resolved. So.
Right, but it's not associated with the API or syntax document is what I mean.
Ah.
So the thing that we're looking at right now is things that we've created issues for, but we might have missed categorizing it correctly. So this should have been associated with the API document, but it wasn't.
I can do that.
Okay, great, thanks. Okay, second one down is Bakash's playground issue 278. That doesn't need to be looked at. Datasets in JSON-LD are horribly ugly and not navigable. That came in from Gavin, and Gavin has said that he's fine with us kind of pushing that off to the next version of JSON-LD, just even discussing the issue.
Manu, before you keep going, how have you sorted this list that you're reading from?
Is it not sorted in the same way?
It's not sorted in the same way for me. I don't know how you've sorted
it. It's sorted
it.
By newest.
That's how mine is sorted.
Yeah, so is mine. The second one I see is header set null page.
Yeah, that's
texture
me too.
Issues.
That's what I have with Greg.
Yeah.
Same as,
okay, so I
but
read
then
that
after that
and
it says convert also partial lists. That's what I have as the third one.
I don't even see that on my list. Awesome.
Do you have any other labels highlighted? So on my list, I don't have any labels highlighted. I just have it sorted. It's all open issues sorted by newest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there 11 open issues?
34.
Whoa.
Okay. I'm seeing 11 open issues.
Yeah, me too. 45 closed and 11
did
open.
You follow
you need
the...
To clear the milestone list and you'll see all of them.
Oh, I didn't... There was a link in IRC that did not exist at the time that I had brought it up. I'm good
now. Okay. All right, so header set in all pages, data set in JSON-LD are horribly ugly. Do you see that as the third item down?
Yep.
Issue 272. Gavin, I believe, is fine with us not looking at this issue right now. I will check with him, but I believe he's fine with us skipping this. Same thing with issue 271, which is the next one down. Creating linked data from JSON is harder than expected. He wants kind of a URL templating scheme, and I don't know. That's probably out of the scope for JSON-LD 1.0, and it's questionable on whether or not we can do that correctly. So I think we're going to push that off to the next version of JSON-LD as well.
Do we have a milestone for, spec.next or something?
Yeah, there is a JSON-LD.next milestone, so we might want to move all of these to JSON-LD.next. I guess the other way of looking at these items is that I don't know if there's a will to work on these features. If we do work on these features, they are going to be substantive changes to the spec, and we will have to go through another last call. So I don't know if we really want to tackle these. I certainly don't want to try and figure out a way to make it easier to navigate data sets, multiple data sets. I don't know if others feel the same. But I guess keep that in mind as we go through these. Do we want to address these issues, or do we want to push them off to JSON-LD next? So right now I'm suggesting issue 272 and 271. we push off to JSON LD next.
I think it's already been done.
Okay. Feature proposal, JSON key specific default namespaces for values. Issue 262.
So this is an interesting feature. Basically, this commenter wants to create different vocab namespaces based on which context, which key you're under right now, which would be interesting. You would basically be able to change the vocab based on where in the tree that you are. But that might be...
I'd certainly put it off till next.
The related thing, the other related one, the 247, we already had marked as going into the next version.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're both sort of related.
Okay.
I'll do that.
So this will be next. Thanks, Greg. Issue 255, add guidance on how to host and load contexts. Dave Lane, you brought that up. Do you think that we should write something in the spec about that? Because that could be kind of editorial.
Wait, which one are we talking about?
Issue 255.
Hang on. Got to look at it. It's not loading for me. Remind me what it is.
So...
Oh, wait, I got it.
Okay.
I don't know. I wrote down what I thought there, so.
Yeah, and I responded that if we're going to go there, we should also consider a way to be able to refer to a context which exists, say, within a script tag in an HTML document, which would that would also be really useful, say, for the activity streams case.
Why?
Well, that would allow them to document the JSON-LD context within the activity stream spec. If they put it in a script tag, we could then identify that and actually load the context directly from the spec versus someone else, versus requiring some content negotiation at the same namespace in order to get a JSON-LD document, which is, and we saw this in the case of schema.org as well, where they struggled with being able to do content negotiation. I'm not exactly sure where they are on that right now, as a matter of fact. But if they could just include it, either hidden or documented it within the single document which exists at that place, and just extracting it from a script tag, then that would be a pretty useful way to do that.
Well, in any case, I think this issue was just sort of wondering if we should give guidance to people on how they should go about all this stuff. I mean, there are lots of ways that it could work, but should there be a certain way that people should design their systems, and should we even bother specifying that, or at least say how to handle the situations? Maybe this is a different document, or a different, just some advice that we put on the website or something. But
yeah, I think I'd feel more comfortable putting it on jsonld.org, because I don't know if we know what the best practice is yet on how to do this. I think there are things that we believe are things that are good, but I would feel pretty uneasy about carving that in stone, effectively putting it in the JSON-LD 1.0 spec.
And I think, I agree with that. Either it goes in the website, or there is some form of a best practices document that emerges, which I think is true for other formats. So I don't think we need to put something like that in the spec. With regards to the other sort of profile that I had been suggesting, that's probably a case where, as with framing, we might want to allow the community to create other sort of specifications that could be implemented and possibly then folded into a JSON-LD.next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So okay. So basically, we're not gonna. This text is not going into the spec, but it should go on the website. We should probably tag it with the website tag.
Yeah. Hold on.
Let's make that clear.
We don't have a website tag, do we?
We should. It's
yeah. We have one.
Bright green.
I will label it.
Okay. Great. Thanks. Okay. Back to the list. Issue 245, spec text for context array feature. And I think, Dave Lane, you mentioned that it's not very clear, the spec is not very clear on how you use an array in the context. I think.
We have tests for it.
We do. I think Dave Lane was saying that it was not very clear how you use it in the spec. But then, I don't know, Dave Lane?
I need to remember. This is 2 months ago. So. Oh, I don't remember what's going on here.
API docs should. You're basically saying that the API docs should probably clarify how.
We have an example. Example 29 uses an array form.
Okay, I think this was just an issue that as I was looking through the thing, it wasn't clear when you first go through it that you could do certain things that you could use an array for context. There are examples for it, but it's not as clear as it could be.
Yeah, and it looks like, oh, I guess there are two items in example 29. I was looking at it, and I was like, it looks like there's only one, but there are two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we need another example that pulls in multiple IRIs. I don't know you'd end up doing that, though.
I don't think we need to add much.
I mean, it says multiple contexts may be combined using an array, which is processed in order. So we have a paragraph that describes the use of an array and gives an example.
Which paragraph is that?
So I am in 6.7 advanced usage and just the paragraph prior to example 29.
Yeah, okay. I think maybe the problem was that I was just looking at it when you initially go through this and you go to the basic concepts and it has the context and there's no example there showing how to use multiple concepts.
Yeah, because this is an example. This is an example of an advanced context usage, so.
Well, maybe. It's just, I don't know. I was thinking that, you know, when you're talking about the section 5.1, that's the context, that it should actually say what you can do with the context, including list that you can have an array of context, because it's not listed there at all.
Yeah, and I think we kept it out just to try and ease the reader into the idea of the context without kind of telling them everything that they could do with the context. And so that's why in advanced context usage, we kind of go into some of the more crazy things that you can do with contexts.
Okay.
Do we have a link to advanced? It doesn't look like we have a link to it. If we just had a link to it at the end of the context section.
No,
that's a good idea.
One of the comments that I had in there on that issue was that there should be links to the advanced section.
Yeah, and they're not. Yep.
Yeah,
okay,
we should
so
just
we should
add that. Just put that at the end and say, you know, for advanced usage, go here.
Okay.
Yeah, but to what do you link to? Just advanced concepts, or
just beyond the basic section, just link to the advanced section.
So in the basic context section, you can link to the 6.7, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that the same could be true for other areas.
Yeah. Wherever we have two sections that are being advanced, at the end of every basic section, we should say, if you want to know more advanced stuff, here's the link to the advanced section.
So IRIs might point to base IRI.
Well, but, I mean, if you're talking about the context, section 5.1, you could link to almost every other section in section 6 because they are all talking about the context in some way or another.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think that we could link to all of them should cause us to not link to at least the advanced context section. I mean, that's fine. Yes, we could create all those links, but I think having a link to at least the one advanced section that is the most pertinent, at least it seems to me, would at least indicate to other people that they could look around for more advanced concepts.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine with adding a link just specifically in the context section. Let me see if there's context.
Just link to advanced concepts or... We could have two links, one to advanced concepts or more specifically to advanced context usage. Something like that can get them down to where they need to go so that they know there's more information for them to read.
Yeah, and in fact, in Section 5, Basic Concepts, I don't think 5.2 or really 5.3, we could link to something else. Basically, if we are going to take a... If you're going to use the argument that, you know, if we do it in this section, then we should do it for all the basic concept sections, there are really only four basic concept sections, so I don't think it would be a big deal to do that. But I don't think that we really want to... I don't know if we really need to link the other sections. Like, for example, for Section 5.2 talks about IRIs. We could say, if you want, you know, to learn more about the use of IRIs in JSON LD, look at section 6.1, setting the base IRI, or 6.3, compact IRIs, 6.2, the default vocabulary, or 6.10. I mean, we could link to a bunch of different sections from the IRI section. And I don't think that doesn't really help.
Just a link to advanced concepts at the end of those sections, I think, would be helpful. You know, if you want to know more about this stuff, see advanced concepts. There's stuff for you to read there.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable.
Okay, so at the end of each section 5.1, 5.2, 5.3, and 5.4.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd be fine with that. It's a bit more vague than what I think Dave Lane was asking for.
Well, some indication that you can find more information is...
I think his problem is that he was... My guess would be, and I would at least have this impression, that when you finished the section, you didn't see anything else. So that you don't have any indication that there's somewhere else to look unless you happen to have read through the whole table of contents, which a lot of people won't do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so then the... proposal is to add a link to the advanced concepts section from all of the basic concepts subsections. Okay, proposal. Okay, so we should move this particular item, SpecText for Context Array feature, we should move it, let's see, I'll move it to a milestone, JSON-LD 1.0 syntax, and then let's make a resolution to link all basic concept sections to the advanced concepts section to ensure that readers understand that. Okay, so the proposal is link all basic concept sections to the advanced concept section to ensure that readers understand that there are more advanced concepts associated with the basic features of JSON-LD. Okay, and I'll try and figure out a way of making it not as... I'll try to make it flow with the spec text. Or try to give them an idea of why they'd want to read the more advanced concepts at some point. Okay. Looking back at the list, spec text or context array feature, that was issue 245. 242 has to do with the
what's the website? I updated that.
Not marked. It should probably be marked.
Updated it.
Great, thanks, Greg. 241 is the website. 126. That's just a website tool. And then 50 is a playground formatting nets, which is also a website. Okay, yeah, we're going to end the call in 5 minutes.
Website and playground, yeah. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right, just so those are all of the... let's see, unlabeled issues. We also have issues that are, hold on, sorry, I'm trying to find this link.
Look at the API and syntax issues?
Yeah, so I'm looking, bringing up the syntax issues right now.
Here's the link.
And then that link that Marcus just put in there. Convert dependencies to normal sections. There should be 6 open issues here. Convert dependencies to normal sections. We just resolved today. Post LC2 editorial comments by Robin Bergeon. This is a discussion that we're having offline on his blog. I have not been able to respond to him completely, but there are some fairly important editorial comments that he has that we should look at more deeply. Issue 263 is briefly described JSON-LD's data model at the beginning of the spec. We need to discuss that as well. This is something that Pat Hayes asked for, and we haven't really discussed this, and we need to.
We narrowed this considerably by just talking about the data model and really referring to RDF concepts for that.
Yeah, I think what Pat wants is that... We've done so much editing to the syntax spec now that if you read it from beginning to end, you get hit with terminology that you've never seen before. Things like, you know, blank. You just start getting hit with terminology that is not defined until the very end of the document, and it's very difficult to understand what the terminology even means without going to the end of the document. I mean, before, it was a bit easier to read through and get an understanding of what you were looking at. Now it's just kind of, we've done so many edits so many RDF working group edits that we're using so much RDF terminology now that it's confusing to read to it from beginning to end. So I think Pat was asking for a light introduction for what a graph-based data model is and does and that kind of stuff. So most of it's editorial, but we have to be careful in how it's done because we don't want to overload people with definitions at the beginning of the spec. So that's that one. We still need to discuss it probably next week. The government linked data feedback, I have not applied to the JSON-LD syntax spec yet. That's issue 254. Issue 245 we just discussed. And then issue 222 is David Booth's JSON-LD review feedback. I believe we've addressed all of David's issues. And I don't think David's on the call anymore. But we will want to ensure that that's true and all that kind of stuff. So we have a couple of open issues that we need to cover in the syntax document. And we'll do that next week, along with continuing down this list of things we need to resolve. Does anything else jump out as something that we need to discuss with respect to the syntax document?
Can I have do API issues count too?
We will talk about the API issues. That's the next thing that we need to review. So we need to review all the open API issues and see if we covered all those things. And then we also need to go ahead.
And let me just make a quick comment on that 245, one of the context things. There was also the issue of the API spec that has the JSON-LD context. It says you can use strings or objects, but it doesn't mention arrays.
Okay. Can you write a quick note in that issue?
Yeah.
So that we're tracking it, and it should. I mean, it should mention arrays or strings.
Well, I wrote
or
it
just arrays rather.
It was written in the original thing. It's just if we're going to resolve the part of it, but not the whole thing. I don't know. I just wanted to make sure that we remember that part.
Yep. Okay. Okay, anything else that we should discuss before we go? Okay, thanks everyone for the discussion, and we'll chat again next week.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Good week. Bye.
Thanks, bye.